Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rap Bastard. And at the series of tubes and wires we call the internet is Joe Crazy Writer. Yes, it is.
I'm here. Jen, are you here?
I am here.
Oh.
What are we listening to?
3. It's a magic number.
What is this?
Schoolhouse
Rock.
I don't know that one.
It's about multiplying by 3.
Yes.
Oh. Well, that's helpful.
Yes,
it's
important to know. How you doing today, Joe?
I got a bone to pick with you.
Oh, Lord.
Yep.
What now?
Well, so last week, you're sitting here, and you know, I get everything all prepared for a podcast, and then you accuse it of the dreaded deadline doom, but I know for a fact it wasn't. You just bailed on us. I mean, what was it? I mean, I know you're upset because the internet lost its collective shit over the Captain America Hail Hydra stuff, and of course, my issue number 2, it was the Red Skull and the baby Cosmic Cube, but you know, and then, of course, the internet would not say, oh, well, Marvel must have changed it. People, it takes 6 months to make a frickin' comic. They just don't change overnight just so that you get off their case. Maybe Corey's upset. There's going to be a black 15-year-old Iron Girl as Iron Man. No, the internet lost its collective shit again. Never mind the fact that Dr. Doom's going to be Iron Man. No, we just don't want black 15-year-old girls running around being Iron Man. Corey, was it the fact that the Incredible Hulk got killed in Civil Wars number 3 and you found
out? Oh, spoilers!
Hey, it's all over the internet. Forget it, man. People are going nuts. Plus, it's on the cover. But anyways, or is it that Greg Rucka somehow got Frank Cho off the variant covers for Wonder Woman? I mean, yeah, let's
oh,
not...
Oh, God, I actually sort of know about that.
Let's not actually make extra money. I mean, no, let's forget it. Let's count by 3s. 21, 24, 27, 30. What was it, Strode? Why'd you bail on us?
I had to work.
Oh, I guess that's good enough.
And how are you tonight, Jen?
I'm okay, I guess. I've been enjoying the weather lately.
Oh, that's going to come to a screeching halt in a few days.
Yeah, I'm aware. I'm still working on getting myself some air conditioning before I die, but...
Apparently, a little bit of Texas is coming up to hang out with Jin.
Indeed. Yeah, I got completely distracted. I was going to talk funny for you guys tonight.
This will be the first... From what I've read, this will be the first time it's been over 100 degrees since 2012 in Minnesota.
Wow.
Yeah. Not like that summer of 2011 where it was over 100 degrees every time I had to go to work and wear a long sleeve shirt and a blazer.
Where was I? I was up in Alaska, wasn't I?
Yes.
I'm sure not looking forward to having that up here.
Now, is that how you sounded as a youngin'?
That is never how I've sounded, but that is how some of my relatives in East Texas do talk, yes.
I have relatives who have moved to Missouri, or as we the rest of us call it, Misery. And they've only lived there for like 3-4 years. They all sound like they've been living deep in the Ozarks for 5 generations. What the hell are you talking about? You didn't sound like that 5 years
ago. Well, I don't understand why it's funny, because I was talking like that at work, and everybody's laughing at me, and I don't really understand it.
Oh, us Minnesotans love accents.
I'll bet you.
Because we don't have one.
I'm going to talk like
you betcha.
The time until it sinks into my normal speech, because I'm starting to sound like you people, and I am not happy about that.
We don't. You don't talk funny. We all listen funny.
Mm-hmm.
So, you guys didn't get to do reviews, but I've actually read 3 things that I've reviewed, and here are those reviews right now. Hey there, kittens and caboodles. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard, and I've got some reviews. Now, we've fallen way behind on reviews, so I wanted to pack these in while they were still semi-relevant. The first review I have is for a children's book we were sent called Double Down. Double Down by Gwenda Bond. It is a story of Lois Lane, and it's Lois Lane as a teenager. I'll read the description here. It is Lois Lane has settled into her new school. She has friends. For maybe the first time in her life, she has a job that challenges her, and her friendship is growing with Smallville Guy. Her online may be more than a friend. But when her friend Maddie's twin collapses in a part of town she should have never been in, Lois finds herself embroiled in a dangerous mystery that brings her closer to the dark underbelly of Metropolis. It is for ages 14 up. It says that it's for the fans of Veronica Mars, Pretty Little Liars, and Buffy the Vampire Slayers. I gotta be honest, this did not feel like a Lois Lane book. It felt like an average young adult mystery novel aimed at girls. The mystery was well done. The story was well paced. It read really quickly. But it did not feel like Lois Lane. It did not... It almost felt like it was name-checking Superman stuff. But it didn't really feel like the character that we've grown to know over the years. It was kind of more of a generic, plucky girl who's going to be a reporter someday. To be honest, it felt more like a Nancy Drew novel than something that a superhero fan would like. If you're listening to this podcast and you're a teenage girl who likes those sort of novels, I would wonder why... I would wonder why you're listening to this, but for what it was okay. I was not a big fan. On the scale that we have, which is buy, borrow, or ignore, I would ignore it. I'm not the target market, and if you're a superhero fan and you see it on the shelf, it's not something you really need to jump after. The next book I am reviewing is a book called Bending Steel by Aldo J. Rigaldo. It's from University Press of Mississippi. It is, I'll read the description again, how superheroes grappled with industrialization, modernization, and capitalism. Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound, it's Superman. Superman Bending Steel examines the historical origins and cultural significance of Superman and his fellow American crusaders. Tracing superhero faction all the way back to the 19th century, Rigaldo firmly bases his analysis on crime novels, pulp fiction, and comics in a historical, biographical, and reader response sources. He explores the roles played by creators, producers, and consumers in crafting superhero fiction, ultimately concluding that these narratives are essential for understanding vital trajectories in American culture. There is a much better version of this book called Super Gods by Grant Morrison. There is a much better version of this book by Gerald Jones. There are much better versions of this book that are written by other people. This is very much an academic piece. This really feels like someone's master's thesis stretched out to book form. It was a hard slog to read. To be honest, I only made it about a quarter of the way through because it felt like I was being lectured at, and with statistics and just it just felt like they were throwing information at me rather than in a book like Super Gods, where you're sitting down with someone and they're spinning a story. This is a very academic book. This is not a reader-friendly book. There are many, many better books that go into this same sort of material. I think this is just for academics and for researchers and things like that. So if you see this on the shelf, this is not one that I would recommend in our buy, borrow, or ignore. This is yet another ignore. Gosh, I wonder why I was having trouble getting Joe and Jin to read these. The last one I'm going to review is a book called ID by Emma Rios. Emma Rios is an artist who's done a number of other books. This is a dystopian tale that analyzes the conflict between perception and identity through the struggle of three people who consider a body transplant as a solution to their lives. This is a standalone graphic novel. It's about 100 pages. It's $10. And while the art is wonderful, the story just takes forever to get started. It's very much a story where things happen and context comes much later. And I think when you only have 100 pages to tell a complex science fiction story, you can't do the, we're going to throw stuff at you and it will make sense later, because you don't have the space. You don't have the time to use a lot of fancy tricks, to use a lot of fancy storytelling, to leave the reader in the dark. Halfway through the book, I was still trying to figure out who the characters were, what the world was. I knew it wasn't our world. I knew it was kind of a future world, but I didn't understand how that world worked and how it connected. And without the description, I wouldn't have known that these characters were talking about body transplants. It's good to look at. I like the art, and I like the fact that the coloring is, they don't use a lot of color. It's a one color thing where it's different shades of the same color. Emma Rios' art is wonderful to look at. She tells a story well, but the story itself is a mess. If you see it on the shelf, you can flip through it and see if the art style is something that appeals to you. And if it's something where the art really jumps out at you, then I would highly recommend that you pick it up. But if it's not, it's not a book you're going to buy for the story. It's a book you're going to buy for the art. And because I need a story to go with my art, this is a book that I would borrow, because the premise is interesting, and while I'm glad I read it, I really didn't feel that it was worth buying. Those are the reviews. We're now caught up. Next week, we're going to have some regular reviews, and back to the show.
How do you like how I did that? Pretty slick.
That was okay.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
Bless your heart.
Oh, I know what that means. I Minnesota nice is pretty much Minnesota passive aggressive. They're like that down south too. Bless your heart means F you.
Not always. Depends on how you say it.
Yeah, the way you said it. Yeah. We had a theme this week.
We did.
We did.
We did. We were going to talk about two artists who we feel should be.
I got some theme music. Pretty good, huh? See, I got to stop at 30 seconds, otherwise we have to pay for it.
Yeah. Two artists that we feel should be getting more attention. It's not artists that are, like, you know, because if we said who's our favorite artist, you know, Joe and I would both be throwing out names like, you know, George Perez and Frank Cho. But these are artists who are kind of underappreciated, and we'd like to kind of shine a little spotlight on them. Just, you know, hey, look for their stuff. Joe, do you have one?
I have.
Oh, wow, Joe's prepared?
I wouldn't say that. Once again, you go way too far.
Jen,
what?
Joe's prepared.
Yeah, that's frightening.
I may need to start drinking.
I am.
That's okay. I'm not.
Thank goodness I got the bourbon. All right, Joe. Who did you have?
My good friend and the nicest man in comic, Pete Krause. Pete and I go back, way back, way back. And I know I've said this story before, but God knows which episode of these 200-plus we've done that I did. But way back when, our good buddy Al Payne, I think Paul Ewart had a piece of it, and I don't know how Greg was involved, but they set up a company called Entropy Enterprises and published a comic called Entropy Tales. And number one had Pete Krause, Timothy Fay, and I forget the third person in it. And they actually came on a radio show that my friend and I were doing. And Pete come on, and Paul Ewart come, and Tim came, and Al never did get out of bed, that lazy bum. But we had them come, and they were talking, and I wish to this day I had a recording of the conversation, because it was really good. All I remember is as we were recording, all of a sudden I noticed something was going wrong. I don't know if something was smoking or just, you know, I think the cassette tape got ganged up. So I just kind of muted the mic and I kept telling Pete, keep talking. Ah, son of a bitch, bang, bang, bang. But he was wonderful. He had such an awesome radio voice. More importantly, Well, let's just put it this way. You don't need to look up those Entropy Tale comics or his self-published one called Nightwolf, because...
Nightwolf.
Yes. I mean, it was just the beginning of Pete's career. Nightwolf itself was kind of a superhero enchilada.
Enchiladas.
But where you really want to... Pete basically did a lot of one-shot stuff. Because I got to be friends with Pete, whatever he did, be it a Superboy or a one story here or a fill-in there, I always picked up his stuff. But the one thing that he started that really got our attention was Power of Shazam from DC Comics, starting about 1995. And, of course, Shazam was part of the... I think that was the first time DC was trying to bring Shazam back into the mainstream. And it was kind of a reboot, if anything. And
they tried a few. You know, in the 70s, they tried to kind of do an updated version of the 40s character. And they even had C.C. Beck working with them a little bit. And then in the 80s, Roy Thomas, I love Roy Thomas. You know I love Roy Thomas, right, Joe?
You love Roy Thomas.
He did a version of Shazam trying to update it for the modern DC universe.
Oh, is that in the Adventure Comics dollar book?
No. It was a four-part miniseries drawn by Tom Mandrake, and it was hurtful. It hurt to read it. It was terrible. But then Jerry Ordway did a graphic novel, The Power of Shazam, which kind of did an updating, making it superhero enough for a modern audience, but kept enough of the whimsy that it didn't feel 90s. And when they started the regular series, Pete Krause drew it.
Yep.
And Pete had this wonderful style that was kind of a mix of modern and old that just fit the book perfectly. I loved
it. And
what
was real fun, and I, to this day I kick myself because I never took myself up on it, is Pete had the ability to take people's photographs and he would draw them somewhere in the comic, which is why if you look in the background, you will spot not only our good buddy Butch, but Dave and Jess, our scrubs from the old store. And of course, there's the one issue, and I don't know where it is or which one it was. I want to say it was number 20, where you flip the page and there was good old Brian Wilson standing there as the bartender. I mean, it was so obvious it was him. It took over a half, if not a full three-fourths of the page. I remember when that book came out, he actually came in that Friday, and we were telling people, hey, he's in the book. Check it out. Have him autograph it. And everybody autographed. He autographed all of them. I know I've got one autographed. To this day, I know Pete and I talk about it, where we've tried to get that page. What the DC did is they split the pages. I gave some to Pete Krause. Jerry Ordway had the others. Pete donated his to charity. I know I picked up a few at the MCBA's art auctions. Jerry got the one that Brian Wilson was in, and Jerry doesn't sell his stuff. I don't even know if he gives it away for charity. And I know we've tried to talk to Jerry about getting that particular page because I would love to present it to Brian. It would just be hilarious. I mean, I'm almost tempted to take the Polaroid I got of Brian and say, listen, I know this guy. Here's the picture that Pete used to get Brian into the book, and I'm looking for this specific page to give to this guy. So Pete currently, well, no, he went on and he dropped out of comics for a while because, face it, you make more money in commercial art. But he came back in 2009 with Irredeemable. I know there were a couple one-shots and fill-ins he did here and there, but his next regular one was with Mark Waid. And Irredeemable is just a fascinating one where basically a Superman-type character called Plutonian just goes bad. For whatever reason, he decides to go bad. And he's gone bad by the time issue one hits. And there's a companion series that goes along with it, I believe, called Irresistible.
No, it's...
Eerie something. Irredeemable. Incorruptible.
That's right. Yeah. Incorruptible. Where a villain, because of what the Plutonian has done, decides he needs to turn good and try to stop him.
Now, Pete did all of...
Irredeemable.
Right.
Didn't he?
Yeah. I think about issue 20, Diego Barreto did some of the work as well. How many issues did this one go?
It lasted 30-some issues.
I know Power of Shazam, I never asked Pete why he dropped. I wonder if it was because they were trying to give a boost to Power of Shazam and had Jerry Ordway do the whole thing with issue 42. It didn't really help because by issue 48 they had canceled it. Irredeemable. Well, I'll talk later when the computer gets caught up. But he's currently doing Insufferable with Mark Waid, and this is through IDW. The first series went, I think, 8 issues. The second one is called Insufferable on the Road. The gist is whatever happens when your crime-fighting sidekick grows up to be an arrogant, ungrateful douchebag who makes Kane look humble. Worse, what on earth could force the two together for one last case? So Pete's still working away. Again, I just absolutely love his stuff. And, you know, anytime I hear what he's doing, I will definitely pick it up. I think Pete, let's see, his last issue was number 28 of Irredeemable. And then it went on to issue 37, where I believe it wrapped up.
Yes.
So Pete's definitely a guy I look for. And, you know, I just think I absolutely love all the local creators. I mean, Dan Juergens, Gordon Purcell. If it's a local creator, I have a soft spot for you. I'll look out for your stuff. Peter Gross, Sandra Cannon. But Pete, to me, is the number one guy that I'll, even if I get rid of all my stuff, which you know I'm constantly doing, his stuff I will definitely hang on to.
Jen, do you have one for us?
I do, but I'm not going to be able to talk about them that much because I actually don't know that much about these guys. But I've been adding I've been watching a lot of other people's work on Facebook lately. So the two that I've really kind of been paying attention to is a guy named Enzo Garza. And I don't know, you know, he came up because I have a lot of mutual friends in common with him. And the other guy's name, and I may butcher this, is Jairo Lantigua. So this guy, Enzo Garza, he put out a comic recently called Gut Ghost, which I haven't seen. And then the other guy does something called Burnt Comics. So I've just kind of been watching their art on Facebook and kind of checking it out as they share stuff. But they're pretty similar. Yeah, well, these guys work both have a kind of, I guess, kind of what I've been digging lately, you know, with my own work is kind of things getting more grotesque and kind of deformed and all that. And their work both has, though their work is very colorful and I mostly work in black and white. But they're both pretty kind of grotesque. He's got kind of, you know, psychological subject matter. This one, the Burnt Comics, you know, he's kind of doing it. It's sort of autobiographical, except the characters aren't human. So those are two artists that I think you should check out. But like I said, they're fairly new to me, so I can't talk about their work a whole lot. I don't know a whole lot about it yet. They just have a very kind of raw, kind of underground, grotesque quality to it that I like.
Yep. Pass it to me.
Was I supposed to? I thought you would.
Usually, as a good host, he just takes it. But I think Corey's off his feed here.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, Corey, please tell me about your artist.
The first artist I have chosen is Sean Phillips. Sean Phillips started, as did a lot of British artists, on 2000 AD, and on. Actually, he worked on the first work that I saw him on was a 2000 ID spinoff called Crisis, which was the same format as 2000 AD, except it was aimed at mature readers, and it was late 80s, early 90s. He did a book series in that called New Statesman, and he followed it up with Third World War. But most Americans first saw his work in Hellblazer. And I'll be honest, at the beginning, I didn't find his work that remarkable. It seemed like a lot of British work that dealt in a lot of shadow. Hellblazer was very much writer-driven and artist-driven. And he's done a lot of work through the years, including, most people actually know him from, he did the first Marvel Zombies miniseries. But no one picked up the Marvel Zombies miniseries because of the art. They picked it up because of the idea that it was, hey, it's Marvel Zombies. But I really started keying into his work when he started working with Ed Brubaker. Ed Brubaker writes crime comics, and the first one that he worked with Brubaker on was Scene of the Crime. It was penciled by Michael Lark, who drew Gotham Central. But they hit it off very well, and he worked with Brubaker on a series called Sleeper, which was supposedly set in a superhero universe about a superhero who had gone undercover years and years previously, and now was going to be found out by the villains he was working with. And while it sounds like a superhero premise, as the story went on, the superheroes gradually faded out, and it became almost a strict crime book. The next book that they worked on together was Criminal, which was a pure crime book over at Marvel's Icon line. And at that point is when he developed a style that I fell madly in love with. Most superhero artists are very big on anatomy, in that you can look at their work and they know where the muscles are. His anatomy is very different because none of his characters are wearing skin-tight costumes, they're wearing clothes. But he understands facial expression and facial anatomy and the folds of clothing. And to me, one of the hallmarks of an artist is, can they draw people in regular clothes that look normal, that looks natural? He heightens the shadows because it's crime and noir and things are very dark. But you look at his stuff and it looks like a colorized 40s movie, which perfectly fits the style of story that he's doing. He has done some other work with Ed Brubaker. They just finished the series Fatale a couple of years ago. They are doing the series Fade Out. They've got new series coming. But Sean Phillips' art is something where now, if his name is on a book, I'm going to get it, because he has a specific style and a storytelling style that's very cinematic. He's another artist who can make people sitting at a bar for more than, for multiple pages, visually interesting and visually exciting, because he knows how to use facial expression to tell the story. His people don't all look the same. And you can look at a Sean Phillips character and you can almost understand their backstory just by how he's drawn their face and how it's aged and weathered through the years. His stuff is very, very good, very, very... It fits the stories that he's telling like very few artists ever do. So if you see, especially if he's working with Ed Brubaker, pick up your Sean Phillips comics. Joe?
I feel completely inadequate after listening to both of you.
Well, we are geeks. We've been doing this a long time.
You never need to feel inadequate because you can always pipe in and go, that's stupid.
Well, I don't have a lot to say, It's just like, hey, these guys are cool. You should check out their stuff.
Yeah, but on the plus side, we wouldn't know about them unless you told us about them.
Yeah, well, I don't have their comics, I can get you some information for the show notes, but they're fairly new to me, so I don't...
They're artists I've never heard of, and that's why I wanted to do this episode, because... You can bring an art perspective that we're not going to have.
Well, clearly I don't, because you guys just talk for like 5 minutes, and I'm like, hey, here's a couple of names.
Yeah, but you've seen our house, my basement. We are covered with crap. Well, at least I consider it crap. I don't know what Corey considers his stuff.
My crap is stuff, and your stuff is crap.
I can live with that.
Okay. Joe, who's your next artist?
I have no idea. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, who could I possibly talk about that? I mean, if I see their name on something, I buy. Frank Cho, Howard Chaykin, Alex Ross. I mean, but these are big names that are big boys that don't need any more I would have to go with a comic creator which I've raved about before, a gentleman by the name of Tom Beilein. He's known mostly for a multiple Eisner-nominated series called True Story, Swear to God. And last year, at least I think it's last year, he did a first in an all-new series of graphic novels called Chikikabra. And it's with an I, not a U. And basically in Puerto Rico, there's a girl, Isabel Sanchez, who could be like any other girl you see in high school except for the creature who lives inside her that's a ruthless killing machine. Chupacabras, vigilantes, fistfights, and weed. I absolutely love the book, and I was going to put it in my geeking, but I'll go ahead and do it now because he has a very simple, very unique style, does fantastic expression with drawn eyes, drawn faces. When he draws women, you're just drawn to them, you know, and he can draw all sorts of different body types. Several times going through this book, I had to stop and just reread because what I read was so mind-boggling. I said to stop and reread it. It's almost like when you're watching a VCR and you stop and rerun a tape, much to the annoyance of everybody else. Well, in a graphic novel, I can do that as much as I want. He's done a number of fill-in issues for things like that. And again, his book is through IDW, and he's hard at work on a second one.
He's got a Patreon account, too, yep. So just go to his Facebook page.
And tell him we sent you.
Yeah.
I actually got a commissioned Supergirl from him a while back. A runner-up would have to be Larry Mauder of Tales of the Bean World. But being that we're still waiting on book number 4, even though book 1, 2, 3, and 3.5 are out there, I'll once his book 4 gets released, I'll be geeking on him a little bit more.
And Jin could be able to join you when you do that, because I believe you have book 1 of Tales from the Bean World in the big old stack of comics I gave you.
Do I?
Yeah.
It's fun stuff. I mean, it's like a process, not really a comic book series. And I'd be real interested when you get to it to see what you think.
Because the only way to describe it is I've never read any comic like it before. There are no humans in it.
Well, that we know of. I mean, there was that whole Total Eclipse crossover, but he made it work within the framework of his, I guess, reality.
Yeah. What I'd like you guys to do, could you fire up your fire-breathing Google machine?
Sure.
Okay, now go to images and type in Scarlet Witch AJA. This is interactive, so listeners, you do it too.
Not if you're driving. What is it, AJA?
AJA.
What am I looking at?
You are looking at work by David Aja. David Aja has not done a lot of comics, but he is the second one on my list. I found his work when he was doing The Immortal Iron Fist. And what really struck me is the designs that he does. He doesn't just draw a page. He designs the page. His work is almost cartoonish when he's doing regular comics. He also did the Hawkeye series, which listeners know that I've gone on and on and on about. But if you go to that Google page, you'll see the covers he's doing for the new Scarlet Witch series, which are like no other comic book covers I've ever seen.
These have a really great retro vibe to them.
And if you notice, they're monotone, they're monochromatic. The only color he uses is red. And each of them looks different. He does design pages. I recently have been reading the Hawkeye, and spoiler alert, he goes deaf for one of the issues, and they kind of explain why Hawkeye was deaf, and then he wasn't, and then he was. But there's an issue where his hearing goes away again, and they use sign language, and there's no words, and you follow the flow without any captions, without any dialogue, without any of that. Now, I don't know sign language, but in reading the page and Aja's design, I was able to tell what was happening in the story. David Aja is a guy, now he's only doing covers, which is a shame. He is somebody who is very slow, but he's doing the covers for Scarlet Witch and Karnak. And he is my second artist. Anything he does, I'm going to jump on immediately. Joe, have you read any of the David Aja stuff? What's your opinion?
Well, if I could get it back from my daughter Holly, I will. She actually has me order it for her week after or month after month. And, you know, I give her the book and I say, give it back when you're done so Daddy can read it. See how well that's gone.
So you haven't got the Hawkeye books yet?
No, I got the comics.
Okay. I strongly recommend you pick up Immortal Iron Fist. Those early, the run that he did with Matt Fraction and Ed Brubaker is phenomenal work. Not just because the writing is good, because you know I'm basically a writing person, but his art, you can see the improvement issue by issue by issue. And I hope that they find him something where he's able to do regular comics again, because while his covers are very striking, I miss his panel-to-panel work. And Joe actually brought up something that I wanted to talk about.
What's that?
He brought up the Frank Cho Wonder Woman thing.
See, I actually know a little bit about this.
What it is, Frank Cho was hired to do 24, what do they call them, Joe? The variant covers?
Yeah.
He was hired to do 24 variant covers. And the writer on the book did not much care for Cho's style of artwork. And when he turned in the art for cover number 6, and you got to see a little bit of Wonder Woman's underwear, the writer said, no, that's not what I want. And the editor went to Cho and said, you need to change this, and Cho instead walked off. What do you guys think of this?
What?
Well, I mean, it's not his book, so... I mean, if they decided that, I mean, shouldn't they have, like, looked at his work and been, like, more familiar with what they could expect from him?
Well, it's kind of like, if you don't know what Frank Cho's work is, then you're really not paying attention to why you hired him to begin with. Because Frank is, what do they call him, good girl artist? I mean, he draws women spectacularly well.
He prefers to be called a cheesecake artist.
I was trying not to go there, but if that's what he wants to be, that's fine. He draws fabulous women. And I don't know what... There is something personally going on between Rucka and Cho. I don't think Rucka likes Cho. So I'm pretty sure he did his best to Pearl Harbor Cho.
And oh my God, he's got a steel chair!
The reason I started thinking about this, because I was thinking, like Jen said, you know, well, if you don't want him on the variant covers, that's fine. But first of all, this, folks, is money on the table. Frank Cho variant covers go insane. People want them. People will buy them. They will spend, comic shops, that is, extra money to get these variant covers in. So for DC to give in and say, okay, Rocka, we won't do Frank Cho variant covers, to me, is a stupid money-wise decision. The other thing, like you said, there's a little bit of Wonder Woman's panty line showing. Oh, Rucka didn't like that? Okay, erase the panty line. Okay, she's not wearing panties, which is probably more in line with an Amazon would do anyway. But again, to me, this was just such a stupid thing. We don't know why Rucka had such a mad on for Cho, but... There you go. After issue 6, no more Cho covers. And I'm pretty sure after issue 2, no more Wonder Woman for me. I call it Fucka da Rucka.
My feeling on it is, they brought in Frank Cho because, hey, people will pay money for a Frank Cho cover. They will. And, Joe, how many years did they slap Brian Boland covers or Adam Hughes covers on Wonder Woman?
Oh, and those are the regular covers.
Yeah. I think the only time they didn't use special cover artists was when Perez was drawing the book or when John Byrne was drawing the book. The rest of the time, they want to have special covers on the Wonder Woman
really,
books.
If Byrne's drawing the book, you don't need that. Or Diodato, because they're fantastic in their own right.
I don't think Deodato drew the covers, though, until the end. I think they still had Brian Boland drawing those covers.
You're probably right. I'd have to go look.
But Greg Rucka wanted a very specific feel for the book. And Frank Cho does a very specific style of art. So I think it was very much a clash of ideology. You know, Rucka wants to do strong women who kick ass, and Cho wants to do sexy women in sexy poses. And there's been a lot of, you know, through the years, Wonder Woman is drawn so that both her boobs and butt are showing in a picture, which, you know, that'll break your spine. What I don't get is why the editor would go, oh, yeah, Greg Rucka is writing this about strong women, and we're marketing to a female, you know, primarily female audience. We're building up for good marketing for the movie. Oh, and here's this guy who's well-known for drawing boobs and butts. It seems like the editor screwed up, and it shouldn't have even happened. That's my opinion. Any other comic news you wanted to go over, Joe?
Well, no, but I'm sure, you know, even as this podcast here drops, the San Diego Comic-Con is over. I'm sure we would think we would have comic news, but it looks like, I think you pointed it out before when we were talking before the podcast, all the comic news has been dropped before the con. There's like, I can't see of anything interesting other than possibly some of the exclusives coming out of the Comic-Con. Alleged Comic-Con.
Alleged exclusives.
Yes.
Alleged. It's all alleged.
It is.
I'm just feeling left out because so many of my friends are there.
I just feel it's kind of weird that Marvel decided they were going to announce the all-new Marvel Now the week before the con, rather than at the convention. DC normally waits till the convention to announce, you know, what's coming up, what their big deal is. No, they just announce their regular stuff on Monday for the next previews. Just, here you go, here's what's coming up next. They didn't really have any big announcements. And I'm wondering if this is going to be one of those years where the comic companies are like, eh, it'll get lost in all the movie and TV stuff. Why do we even bother? Because I remember even up to like 2-3 years ago, Marvel and DC would hold their big announcements. They would even hold their solicitations to announce at San Diego. And they're not doing that anymore. Even though this year, San Diego Comic-Con has its own streaming Roku channel. Want to watch the panels? Well, guess what? You pay, I think it's like $9.99 a month. There you go. You can watch all the panels. They're not live, but you can watch them. Are they going to go down and talk to the artists?
No.
No. The hell are you watching?
I'm watching a little baby dance for beans.
Now I'm just concerned. Beans will make a dance. Beans
will make a dance. Beans make a dance. There we go.
So that's not the convention we're going to, is it, Joe?
No. We weren't invited.
No.
We weren't invited.
No.
We've been invited to other conventions.
Do tell.
Yeah, we're going to be at Blizzard World in Minneapolis. Blizzard World, Minneapolis Comic Con, August 6th, 2016. We're going to be there. I'm going to be broadcasting. It's at the MTS Charter Schools at 2872 26th Avenue South, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Blizzard World had a convention back in February that none of us were able to attend, but we're going to be there this year from 10 until 5.
Neat.
We will be live on the interwebs. And who knows what will happen. Who knows?
So it's on August 6th.
August 6th, that's 6th. Right.
Okay. Because you told me the 5th.
Yeah, well, I have trouble with
You're
time.
Trying to, like, have me show up a day early and nobody's going to be there.
No, I'm in an alternate universe where time flows differently.
That's pretty much my permanent state.
I love how they say artist tables are provided, but I had to pay $20 to get an artist table.
They mean they're actually providing you, like, the physical tabletop.
Dealers must bring their own tables.
Maybe.
Admission is $3 for kids 11 to 17, $5 for adults, and as always, free if you wear a costume. Joe, do you remember those costumes you had as a kid that were just kind of like plastic film with a terrible mask that was held by a rubber band?
Yeah.
You should wear one of those.
What if sure. I'm cosplaying myself?
Well, you're getting in anyway because you're an artist.
Fine, that was going to be my cosplay.
You were going to dress as me?
I had an umbrella and a hat.
I would love to see that, Joe.
I'm putting them back. Fine.
No.
I'll bring them back to the Goodwill tomorrow.
No. Wait, what Goodwill are you finding top hats at?
Nope. Forget about it. So that's one con. What's the second con?
The second con we're going to is LionCon, which is primarily a gaming convention. It's being held up in St. Cloud, Minnesota, and it is August 27th. Starting at 10 in the morning and going until 10 at night.
Oh, my God.
And I will be, not only am I going to be broadcasting, but Dangerous Dan Moore is the guest of honor, which proves that, yeah, maybe there's not a lot of honor there. But he is the guest of honor, and we will be doing at least one panel.
That was unusually snarky for you.
Well, Uncle Rat Bastard.
Yeah, you're always on with the feel-good, like, I'm your humble servant stuff, and there you are, just like, that was a pretty good burn.
The true Stroh.
That was a pretty sick burn.
Boy, he gets a
Uncle Rat Bastard is making a comeback.
Gets a little pie in his fridge, and boy, he just, a snark comes out.
Who bought him pie?
Well, me.
You bought your own pie?
And work.
He can afford it now.
We'll get to that.
Okay.
We'll get to that. I have a hanging at the home story. But it is at number 10, 4th Avenue South, St. Cloud, Minnesota, St. Cloud's River's Edge Convention Center. There are all sorts of people who will be going.
I will be there.
And 12 hours of podcasting live, folks. I'll be doing panels. Who knows? Maybe we'll do an Ask the Strode panel.
And then
Holiday Geek Expo in December.
Wait a minute. You're way ahead of me, son, because you skipped over Fall Comic-Con, the one-day wonder, the 3,300 square foot of awe-inspiring comic book wonderment. We're going to be there October 8th, 2016, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Minnesota State Fair Edumacation Building.
Because we need some edumacation.
And if you go now to www.mcbacomiccons.com, you can get yourself some advance tickets and get a chance of getting one of them 100 grab bags for the first 100 attendees. Free parking, door prizes, and, of course, the Nick Post Scholarship Silent Auction. Last year, I was happy to put together a bunch of books that the MCBA acquired from Nick Post's personal con stock. And we basically put together about 100 variant covers and auctioned them off. And I got to tell you, folks, I got more laying around my basement. I think I might whip up another box. But this time, I'll throw in some of my crap just to make it more interesting.
And then, hold on.
There's more.
Joe, there's more. Of course there's more.
There's always more.
If you come up to my table and tell me that you like.
You know I'm not going to be there.
I don't know if you're going to be there or
you're
not, but I know you're
going
to be at the table.
I'll be there, but I ain't going to be hanging around no party.
Oh, you're there, but you're not there.
Oh,
I get it.
There's stuff to find, I mean.
If you come up and tell me you listen to the show, you will get one of two cookies.
Or, unless I get to them first. So, yes, folks, save my diabetes. Eat some cookies.
And we will talk about the two kind of cookies when we get closer to the show. But we will be live at all of these conventions.
I can't get any closer to the show.
At all of these conventions, I will be broadcasting live on the YouTubes.
You see how he just kicks you and I out, Jin? He's like, I will be doing this, and I will be doing that.
What well, because Jin is going to be working her table.
Uh-huh. I work it.
I will be hopefully taking solicitations for the MSP, well, we call it SpringCon, but they call it Comic-Con, because if you got something you want to donate to the charity table for next year, now is a good time to bring it rather than have it sit around. Plus, you can take it as a tax write-off, depending on your tax situation, for 2016 instead of waiting next year.
And just think at all these shows, probably by the last hour, and I'm thinking the St. Cloud show, the last 4 hours, I'm just going to be a babbling idiot. God knows what sort of strange, bizarre crap will come out of my mouth.
You know, I've been
so operating as usual.
Yeah, I've been working through the SpringCon shows, and yeah, that babbling idiot thing seems to be. Hi, folks. This is your old Uncle Rat Bastard, the babbling idiot.
I think my favorite moment as I'm cutting those into hour-long episodes, it's like, oh, okay, it's just me talking. Obviously, I've got to pause here. Someone asked about the Warren magazines. I went for a half hour just riffing on Steve Ditko and other artists working for Warren in the early 60s. Where do I have this crap in my brain?
I don't know.
There's something wrong. There's something seriously wrong with me. And next year, there will be even more conventions.
We
will have announcements because Dangerous Dan has been asked to be the guest of honor at a couple other conventions, and he's asking me if I want to tag along and broadcast, and we'll even have a book to sell at LionCon. Wow. So there you go. We're going to be all over the place. And if you've got a convention you'd like us to show up to, just go ahead and email us at solitarerosenetwork@gmail.com.
Now it's us again. For a while it's I, now it's us. You see what we got to work with.
I know.
I'm amazed people don't come to my house and bludgeon me to death with a club.
Yeah, but you're downhill of a pickle factory. Who the hell wants to take that chance?
Is he really?
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
Someday Corey's going to die in a briny accident.
We don't need to mention the name of the pickle factory, but
it's just gonna flood. Well, how many pickle factories can there be?
Stop it. It's bad enough that people know that it's not a real compound.
That sounds like a setup for a dirty joke or something.
No, but it is
a take to get into the pickle factory.
Downwind of the pickle factory.
Boom. It was a cucumber yesterday. It's a pickle today.
Joe, one of the things we have not done in a long time is a segment that we like to call Hanging at the Home.
Trying to distract us.
It might work. I love his Hanging at the Home stories.
So last week was not a good week for me and electronic devices.
What did you break?
Oh, no. It's not that easy. So the weekend came by, and I got home on Sunday and looked at my wrist. And you guys have seen that I have a handy-dandy fitness tracker. It's really sleek. It's really cool. And when I got home, it was not in the little plastic wristband. So sometime between Saturday morning and Sunday night, the little black disc that's about the size of a quarter detached from the wristband and is now out in the world.
Oh, no.
Never to be found again.
Someone's going to know how many steps you took.
But not only that, they'll know how much sleep I haven't gotten. And then Monday, I had to go into work. And Tuesday, I came home and I noticed that one of my extra drives was acting weird. So it's like, oh, I'm about to lose one of my backup drives. Great. So I deal with that, and then Tuesday night I go into work. Now, when I do an overnight sleep at the group home, there's one cottage where I have to sleep in the med room.
Oh, God, I thought you were going to say sleep in the nude. Whew.
That does not happen ever anywhere for any reason ever. So when I work at that cottage, I have like a knapsack that I put my glasses and my wallet and my other stuff in and put it on the desk. Well, I was so tired when I got in, I put the knapsack on there, and I took my wallet and I dropped it on the desk and I put my glasses and I blew up my balloon, which is called a inflatable bed. But really, come on, let's be honest. I'm sleeping on a balloon.
It's not the one that Jen blew up a few weeks ago, was it?
No.
No, that was a donut.
Oh, well, look.
I'm not sleeping on a donut. This is more of Long John.
Ah.
And I wake up, and I start gathering my stuff, and I squeeze all the air out of the balloon and put it back away, and I take my stuff out to the car. Unbeknownst to me, one of the clients who's in a wheelchair and carries a bag of toys with her wheeled in to the medroom and took her pills and saw my wallet and grabbed it and put it in her bag of toys and wheeled out. Now, I'm exhausted because I only got about 4.5 hours of sleep that night, so I just gather my stuff, and okay, my shift is done, I punch out, and I come home, and I get a shower, and I change, and I go to where I keep my wallet, and the knapsack's like, oh, it's not there. Crap, I got to get going, I'm going to be late. I don't need my wallet today, I'll be fine. Go to work, don't have my wallet, so my lunch is basically the snacks I keep in my desk. Dried fruit's a good lunch, Joe. And I come home, and I go, okay, I'll search the house. Maybe I put it on the desk, or I put it on a counter, or put it somewhere. Nope, not there. All right, I left it at work. Fine, no problem. Get into work Wednesday night. Did anybody see my wallet on the desk? Nope. I look where they locked things up. Nope, not there. At this point, I get upset. Because this isn't just my wallet, Joe, with the credit cards and everything. I have my ID papers in there because I need them for my job. I have my driver's license and my Social Security card in there. And you know, you can't get your Social Security card without a driver's license. You can't get a driver's license without a Social Security card. So I figure, all right, maybe when I got home and I changed clothes, it fell into my bed. I come home, I get dressed, I go to work, I come back, I tear this house apart Thursday night. Tear it apart. Utterly, completely tear it apart. Don't find it. So I have to call, and I have to cancel all the credit cards, and I'm trying to find out, okay, how do I get a new driver's license? You need your Social Security card. How do I get a Social Security card? You need your driver's license. So I go into work Thursday night, and I'm crushed. All my electronics have been acting up. I need to provide information for my I-9 that I'm not going to have. I don't know what I'm going to do. I have no idea what I'm going to do. And I come into work and I ask, did anybody find my wallet? Nope, nobody found the wallet. It takes me a good 3 hours to calm my brain down and get to sleep. So I wake up, I've only got about 3 hours of sleep. I'm depressed, I'm upset, I don't have any money because my credit cards are all gone. I have a total of $7 in cash in my house. So I'm sitting at one of the tables at the group home, just kind of moping. And this client comes up, and what she does with her bag of toys is she will take a toy out and hand it to you to show you. And you're to look at it and give it back to her. And if you don't give it back to her fast enough, she gets angry. So she gives me a toy, and I look at it, and I give it back. And she gives me another toy, and I look at it, and I give it back. And she gives me her minion, and I look at it, and I give it back. And she gives me my wallet, and I look at it, and I go, aw, damn it. So I go, at least I have my wallet. And I go to put it in my pocket. Joe, do you know what happened at that point?
Let's see. She probably gang-tackled you and put you in an F5 stunner.
Close. She grabbed my arm with the force of someone who wanted to kill me and started screaming at the top of her lungs. Just this loud, piercing wail. And the staff comes running from the other room. Oh my God, what's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong? Jeannie had my wallet, and now she wants me to give it back. And I'm trying to wrestle my arm away from her grasp, and she is not giving up till she gets that wallet. Another staff had to actually grab her wheelchair and pull her away, and she was still screaming. But I have my wallet, so I got that going for me, which is nice.
You made the list, fella.
Yeah, I know. I'm always on the list. You know who's not on the list?
Who?
These guys, our sponsors.
Yes, here at Solitaire Rose Networks, we have ads. That's right, we have ads. Just like every other podcast. Come on, it's okay. Our first advertiser is our longest-running advertiser, and that's DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best, bar none, web host all over the interwebs. You could go to other web hosts. You could go to the ones that have big ads on TV and everything, and they're not going to give you the service, the dependability, and the reliability of DreamHost. Head on over to DreamHost.com, use the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, and get $20 off your first year of web hosting. Another of our sponsors is Dollar Shave Club. Dollar Shave Club has great blades at low prices, and let's face it, you gotta shave. Head over to shaved.by/C19DC, get you some blades, they're wonderful, I use them, I use all of our sponsors. Matter of fact, head on over to crazycomics.com. Over on the right-hand side of the page, you'll see all of our sponsors. Bombas, Grays, Flaviar, Dollar Shave Club, and DreamHost. If you would like to advertise on any of the podcasts in the Solitaire Rose Network, you can. Just email solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising.
And after we do that, we always ask Joe, what's going on the eBays?
Oh, yeah, it's the dog days of summer. Everybody's waiting to see what kind of exclusives get coughed out of San Diego Comic-Con. I did notice SpringCon guest Joseph Linsner, some guy you probably never heard of, put out his sketchbook and offered the first 50 to eBay people that couldn't get to San Diego. Sold out within 2 hours. He put another 50 up. And, of course, usually you get them when you're at San Diego Comic-Con. So if you want one, probably too late. But, you know, it's always worth checking out. You might have more on eBay. Or they might show up somewhere. You never know. So as I was digging through the basement, or as the vault I decided to call it, I remember somewhere deep down I had a... Well, Corey, you remember Battlestar Galactica, the original, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. They had, from Joyride Studios in 2005, they did a series of a couple figures, but they did some really kick-ass Colonial Vipers. And I actually liked the ship, so I thought, you know what, I paid $5 for this dumbass thing. I'm just going to open it up and have some fun with it. But, as I'm wont to do, I checked there on eBay's first, just in case this here toy could be worth $150 frickin' dollars? Oy vey, Scott. Obviously, I didn't open it, but I did put it on eBay, and although the package was damaged and a little crusty, I did make some good coin on it. So it's just one of those things, like, if I had the money, and if you want to make money on eBay, go out and buy a toy. The more obscure or limited the toy, the better. I was walking through Toys R Us today, and I found a... limited edition Tiger Zoid from Power Ranger, which came out back when I had the shop. It's a $200 toy. Not many people are going to be buying this $200 toy, and the ones that do will probably end up sitting on it. Buy it, sit on it for 5 to 10 to 20 years, and maybe it too will go up in value. I'll give you one right now that's a sure bet. You know the action figures, Corey, the Batman 66?
Yes.
There is a Batmobile with Batman and Robin in it. It runs about $70. If you can find one, Batmobiles always go up in price, with the exception of the little teeny tiny Hot Wheel ones.
Damn it.
Pick them up, throw it in a closet, forget about it. That's the one toy that usually goes up for two reasons. First of all, I don't see mom and dad buying a $70 Batmobile toy for little Johnny to play with. And second of all, the geeks like me who get it are the ones who are just going to sit on it. Case in point, I ran across this Batman 1966 San Diego Comic-Con exclusive from 2008. It's 3 1/50th size cars. It's got the Batmobile, the Batcycle with the sidecar, and the Batgirl cycle. And so, like I'm wont to do, I look it up on eBay. Could not find one on eBay. I did find that the 2007 exclusive was going for about $170, and the 2010 exclusive was going about $75. And these are just the Hot Wheel ones. Again, if you can't get to San Diego and load up on a bunch of these exclusives to flip, you could probably pick a few up on eBay. So I threw this sucker out on eBay for about $100. And I'll let you know if it sells next week or not. So, you know, it's just one of those things. Before you put something, before you donate it, before you trash it, before you get rid of it, time and time again, I've run across surprises from just the most innocuous things. A $5 toy I bought on a lark and just never opened from 2005. Well, it's worth $100 now. So that's your eBay tip for the day. If you, of course, want to buy something from me off of eBay, just let us know if you heard it from this here podcast, and I will take something out of my vast accumulation of crap. And if Corey's not looking, maybe one from his. And
what?
Never mind. And put it in the box as a freebie for you. Heck, if you know you're coming to one of these here cons coming up, I'll meet you there and give it to you. Save on some shipping. KRAYZ on eBay. Come get some.
And then the next thing we do is ask Jen what's going on with the arts.
Oh, goodness. Did we ask me that?
We don't.
Yeah, we have for the last few months.
I don't know why you always ask me that. I'm always doing the same thing. I'm not like Joe. I don't have this, like, you know, rotating, like,
sick compulsion,
though. Like, merry-go-round of shit that I, like, hawk on eBay, where I can, you know, like, oh, here's what I'm peddling this week.
I love eBay.
So,
I haven't even talked about the stuff I bought yet.
You know, it's kind of a freaking, but actually what I'm up to is, like, a million things. I started doing my YouTube videos again, after taking a break from that for a while for mental health reasons. You know, clearly I've been talking in funny voices more. It's kind of just like, I was talking to somebody the other day about it, and, you know, there's been so much stuff that when I was a kid, like, I've always been a visual artist, you know, people always telling me, oh, you're going to be an artist when you grow up, until, like I said, in the one video, like, until they realized I believed them, that I was listening. Then it's like, oh, shit, you need to do something that'll actually pay. But because I've always primarily been a visual artist, and that's always what I've focused on, like, I took theater in school, I wanted to be an actress for a while, I wanted to do voiceover work, you know, I love to sing, I love to dance, I'm not that great at either one of them. It feels like now kind of I'm finally bringing my work in to, like, one, kind of forming it into, like, one cohesive unit where, like, all of the little things I like to do are coming together as sort of one vision. So it's all, I guess, tied up in my image, obviously, because so much of my work is autobiographical. But I have so much work, you know, like, I don't understand the concept of writer's block, because I've got, like, creative writing, I write poetry, I've got, you know, my blog, I want to start writing more, like, atmospheric, like, kind of memoir type stuff, where it's not strictly, it's mainly still autobiographical, but a little more airy, a little less specific. And I'll probably start doing readings of those just because I enjoy it and they're easy to do. And I think I have a really nice monotonous delivery that can really help you if you've got, like, insomnia or something like that. So, you know, I mean, I serve a useful purpose. But I just have, like, something happened in, like, the last month especially where it's just like a floodgate is opened in my head. I mean, I'm any spare minute, you know, like, I'm sitting here, like, writing notes while you guys are talking, or, you know, I'm standing around somewhere else and I'm in line somewhere waiting for 10 minutes, and there's just stuff constantly popping in my head, like, either stuff I'm sketching that I want to turn into full pieces later, or ideas for comics, or ideas for poems, or kind of narrative things I want to do. I've been itching to get to work back on my websites again, and it's hard because, you know, I'm already kind of working the equivalent of 2 full-time jobs, and I just don't have any more time. I've cut down on my social life significantly because I have so much work I want to do. It's just, I don't even know what to do with it all. So, I mean, that's kind of what I've been up to. It's just like a little bit of everything and just ramping it all up to 11. So that's it.
And Joe, she said she had nothing to talk about.
I know. It's amazing.
I don't have, you know, whatever. I'll do the same thing next week.
And it'll be different.
No, it won't.
Sure it will.
No, it won't.
Hey, don't.
Well, if you want, we could just cut this part out and drop it in next week, save you
sure.
some time.
Or what we could do is we could do a whole episode of every single thing what Jen was doing since she started joining us with the podcast. We could fill an hour with that.
We're not going to do that.
I got lots of time on my hands.
Well, thank God somebody does.
You're the only one.
Yep, that's part of my job.
He works for the government.
Yeah, you got to remember, I sit in a basement and look for bombs and luggage because, you know, bombs and airplanes tend not to go together.
Right.
Well, now it's time for my favorite part of the show.
The end?
No. Oh. Freaking and geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on this week?
Speaking of government jobs.
Oh, Lord.
Corey, what's your name?
Your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard.
Jen, what nom de plume do you want to go under?
You can call me Jen.
All right. Just so you know, apparently TSA pays somebody a lot of money to go on Facebook and find the posts that their various employees who work for TSA make about TSA and print these things out and put them in a box.
Did you get busted?
No, but what I find is disgusting is the fact that, first of all, government computers generally do not get Facebook. Most social media, web-based emails, things like that have been blocked by whatever government security agency, and TSA is no exception. But somewhere they have one that is not blocked because somebody goes on and looks at all the posts that we make and thinks, well, let's print them out and put them in a box and save them.
Is it did they put them in a box in the big warehouse at the Ark of the Covenant's in?
No, they put them in the same box you go to when you fuck up one of your tests and have to sit while you wait for the paperwork to get processed to fire you.
Ah.
Now, of course, I'm of the attitude that if any one of these pinheads want to confront me about what I write or say about TSA, prove me wrong, butt munch, and I'll gladly give a retraction. But for 99% of what I say, and probably, I know, hell, I'll go 100% of what I say about TSA, it's true, it's a fact, and that's the way it's at. Now, the reason
I say this, because
I haven't been sure, but I'm pretty damn sure that nobody from TSA listens to this here podcast. But if they do, I just needed your names on file so they know who my comrades in arms are.
Oh.
Thank you very much. Another thing I'm freaking on.
Hold on, Jen.
Huh?
I think Joe said we're going to get sent to a gulag.
No.
Why?
That's a step up from where you guys live. No gulags for you.
What?
I tried to get in to go see The Killing Joke. Sold out. Don't know why I bothered. You know, they're going to release it on DVD. And, you know, rather than go to The Killing Joke, I decided to stay home and podcast with these here people, my friends here.
We're friends?
Well, when we get to the gulag, I at least want to be bunking together with you guys.
I have a friend.
Then we can at least do the podcast from TSA gulags, you know, somewhere deep in Manchester, New England. Oops, I said too much. Anyways, it's coming out on DVD, but my daughter and I tried to go. We thought it'd be fun to see it in the theater, but ain't happening, so it's not going to do it. And, you know, I don't know if it's fair to bring this up in freaking because this happened so long ago. I should really learn to let go. But that bitch on Romper Room never once said my name
Romper
when she
room?
Was looking through her magic mirror.
At least you had a normal name. Joe, when you went places, when you went on vacation, and you go to the Stuckies, and they have all the keychains, your name was there.
What are you talking about?
At the end of Romper Room, the school teacher...
What's a Romper Room?
It's a
And another
children's
thing I'm
show.
Freaking oh. on, I feel very old right now. Very, very old.
But they would hold up the magic, what was it, magic mirror? Which was basically just kind of it's a mirror with no glass in it, and she'd look at the camera through it, and she's, I see Billy and Tommy and Tracy, and they're, if my name's not going to show up on any of those keychains, do you think they're ever going to say Corey? No. No.
I thought Corey was a pretty normal name.
I
no.
thought for sure no. she would say my name when I stood in front of the TV naked, but nope, didn't happen.
Well, she was trying to get you to put some damn pants on.
I was only 9 years old. Jen, what are you freaking on? What's got you down in the dumps?
Oh, my goodness. I still have, like, money tied up from my debit card getting stolen, so I have to fill out all this paperwork and mail it back to Texas so the bank will give me my money back. So that's kind of shit. And we've had the... dealing with the lawyer for my dad's estate and stuff, and there's issues with the house, so I've had to deal with that. And but the thing that's really bumming me out today is that I lost my watch.
Oh.
So if you know me, I have this watch that I've had for probably 3 or 4 years now, and it's a Casio watch with like the steel band, and it was too big. I took it off a lot because when I do things, I can't stand having stuff on my hands. So I'll wear it and I'll take it off and put it back on constantly, and it's too big and I don't know how to remove the links, so it just slides on and off my hand. And it's one of those men's watches, and this watch has been like the biggest like pickup thing for like older men. Because like I get comments on it constantly from like old men, like, hey, I had that watch 20 years ago or 30 years ago, because it's the same style, they've never changed it, and I liked it because it had the date on it, and so I need to know what day it is all the time, or, you know, I'm looking at whatever reason, like, I really like this watch. I got it for like $15 at Target, so it's not a huge loss, though I was pretty proud of that watch because it was on sale, and I had one of those extra, like, cartwheel coupons on the Target app, and I got them to, like, price, I think I had them price match Amazon, I can't remember. I got, like, a crazy good deal on this watch, and I was at Como Park a few days ago, and I think that's where I lost it because I'm pretty sure I had it on earlier in the day, and then I was sketching on the bench in the park. And so I can't stand having anything on my hands when I'm drawing, so I believe that I took the watch off and sat it on the bench, and then there was nothing on the bench when we left, so it probably got bumped or something and maybe slid down onto the ground between the slats on the bench. So I hope whoever found my watch gets many more years out of it and enjoys it, and I haven't looked to see if I can replace it yet. So
I know what happened.
What?
My fitness tracker
ran away.
Found your watch, and they're now in New Orleans, yeah. Just having a party.
Yeah, well, I was thinking something like that when you started talking about losing that, because, I mean, really, like, it really was, like, the best pickup thing if you want to, like, find older men that are kind of out of touch with modern times. because I just had, like, it was just such an icebreaker, you know?
These hey,
like,
no.
I was like, you know, questionable older men, and they're like, hey, I like your watch. I had one just like that. All right, okay, I can dig it. So, yeah, no more watch. So I'll have to find another one. That or saying,
nice...
like, what is that on your wrist? Or people still wear watches?
You have a nice wrist.
Uh-huh.
Do you have two of them?
It's a nice Casio you got there.
Do you know what time it is?
I do, actually. No, I don't.
I remember when I used to have to touch my watch to find the time. We just invented a new porn. Watch porn.
Watch porn. I'm pretty sure.
Watch porn and dino porn.
Everything already exists. There is nothing new in this world.
What is that, rule 39? 13?
37.
I'm leave it to you to know.
Of course I know.
There are so many rules. Corey, what are you freaking on?
We are now down to 3 full-time overnight staff at the group home.
I think Corey has gone beyond the fringes of audience comprehension, folks. Mark this episode down. This is the one where Corey loses grasp on reality.
No, that was episode 4. Remember how I was complaining about the comic series Scarlet and how it took them 3 years to put out an issue, and then they put out 3 issues in like 2 months? And I swore that I would not buy them.
Potty mouth.
I bought them. They were very good. They ended on a cliffhanger and said, Scarlet will be back next year. Why do I do this to myself? Why do I do this to myself? Ladies and gentlemen, if you're reading the comic Scarlet and you went, oh, I should pick those up, it ends the story. It doesn't end the story. Doesn't end the story. The second thing is Marvel announced the Marvel Now books, and if they publish everything that they say they're going to publish by October and November, they're going to be putting out 70 comics a month.
That's a lot of comics.
That's in fucking sane. We thought it was nuts when DC were putting out 52 comics a month. Joe, they're going to be putting out 70 to 80 comics at $4 a pop.
Who reads all this stuff?
That's it. I'm out of here.
I'll be reading it on Marvel Unlimited because you just pay $60 a year and you get to read them all. So I honestly don't know what their business plan is other than flood the market.
I can see Joe's like hand reaching up from the stairs and you just see like a sea of books when you open the door to the basement. Yeah, he's just like muffled screaming and just the hand slowly sinks into the books.
But the main thing I am freaking on, there is a website out there that I will not name because they are they're terrible, but it is a right-wing news with a Z website founded by someone who's dead now, who actually started his website because he wrote a bunch of terrible movies and the people in Hollywood said, we're not going to produce these movies. And he got very angry and said that Hollywood was full of liberals and built a career out of making fun of liberals and snorting cocaine. And this website had a huge article that comic sales are in the toilet because of all the evil social justice warriors who are turning our superheroes into women and Negroes and Muslims and other
Chinese,
things.
Chinese, don't forget. The Chinese also. And,
no, they didn't complain about that, but they did spend...
No, somebody
three,
did. I read some of
the... Is it Chinese Hulk?
Yeah.
Totally Awesome Hulk is Amadeus Cho, the, what, fifth smartest man in the Marvel Universe?
Yeah.
But they spent 3 paragraphs complaining about Iron Man being replaced by a 15-year-old African-American girl. Spoiler alert, it's not going to last forever.
Oh, I saw that.
But not one single word about Iron Man also being replaced by a swarthy Eastern European criminal, Dr. Doom. And it went on and on and on about how comic sales are lower than they've ever been. And they've driven off their audience because they're pandering to all these minorities. And on and on and on and on. And Joe, they just released the sales figures for June. Did you read about the sales figures for June?
No, I wait till you summarize them.
Swarthy. I love that word.
Comic sales in June, both in dollars and units, were the highest they have been since 1997. Comics are selling better than they have in 20 years. by the way, the comic market this year, in the month of June, just passed $1 billion in sales. That's billion. It's the fastest the comic market, in total, has passed $1 billion. That doesn't count digital sales. It doesn't count bookstore sales. And it doesn't count... It only counts things that have sold through Diamond. Diamond has sold $1 billion worth of comics. But this news site says that comics are selling worse than they ever have before. I'm sorry, but I know this market. And this article is more full of shit than the RV that they used in the Shazam TV series. And they never went to town during that entire series to empty the tank. Even the Washington Post, big article, comic sales better than ever. In it, they talk with comic shop owners who talk about how they're getting in a much more diverse clientele. James Sine, owner of Isotope in San Francisco, constantly talking about how over the last 5 years he's seen more women in the shop, more African Americans in the shop, more Asian Americans in the shop. The audience for comics is becoming diverse. And who did this News with a Z site talk to? They talked to these old comic shops that have been around since the 80s, who just sell their Spider-Man and their X-Men and their Batman, talking about, yep, sales are down. I don't think I've ever seen sales down this low. For some of these new Marvel books with women in them, I only order single numbers for the shelf. Well, then you're an idiot and a terrible businessman, and you should go out of business because you're hurting the comics market. Meanwhile, you have The Source, you've got even the College of Comic Book Knowledge, you've got all these shops all around the U.S. that are growing. Jin, you've been to The Source, you've been there on a weekend, it's busy.
Oh yeah, The Source is fantastic, but yeah, I stood there, well I know I talked about it before, but I was there with Mark Stigbauer and another guy that Bud Hensel, which was just there hanging out. But yeah, I stood there for like over an hour, 2 hours, and watched people come and go. And I mean, the shop was busy. There was all kinds of people in there, all ages of people. There was gaming going on in the back. People were picking up comic books. People were picking up gaming stuff. They have T-shirts. I mean, it was busier than the last few times I've been to the mall, you know? So... definitely. And I think too, like the shops that are, you know, they have a good local section at The Source. They feature different stuff. So if you're just sitting around like selling the Spider-Man books, you know, then I don't know.
You're just going to get the same people.
Right.
And the market had to expand because it had been shrinking and shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. And it's not just that the readers were aging out. They're dying out. You can't keep selling nostalgia. Nostalgia eventually fades. It's not like people are lining up going, boy, when's that next Shadow novel coming out? No, you have to market to a bigger audience. And the bigger the audience you market to, the more potential customers you have. The thing that's been amazing about Facebook is more and more artists are pushing their work on Facebook. Not just the comics, but here's what I sketched this morning. I've got a big stack of blank covers. I'm going to be doing sketch covers, $50 a pop. Let me know what characters you want. Bill Sienkiewicz is just showing his gallery work. He's showing the sketches he does. We're drawing in a new audience, and these angry people who are pissed that comics aren't the way they were in 1965, leave. Please leave. There's the door. Go away. I love nostalgia as much as anyone. You ask me, I could tell you all about comics from the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. But if you're making comics just like that now, they aren't going to sell because that's not the market anymore.
You're not even making comics like the late 90s or even like the early 2000s, because that's when I would hang around in comic shops a lot. And even the places I go now, there's a very different atmosphere. You know, even back then it was more of a, you know, I step into a place like The Source and I feel completely at home. You know, nobody looks at me funny. Nobody, there's none of that. You're not supposed to be here vibe.
Oh my God, a girl.
Right. Even like back in the 90s, like I would be, you know, kind of just pounding the pavement, sort of kind of pushing flyers and trying to get the word out about my work. And you go in and, you know, you either get these sidelong glances like, what are you doing here? You get asked out to a movie. Like, holy shit, there's a girl in here, you know? And there was still a very much a sense in a lot of shops, at least the ones I would go to, that, like, you, maybe if you didn't belong there, they were almost, like, suspicious of you, like, why are you here, you know? And so the atmosphere has really changed a lot.
And the diversity of the comics has changed a lot.
Oh, yeah. There's so much, like, different material now, you know? I don't remember, like, when I read Poison Elves, you know, now there's all kinds of, like, independent comics that kind of fill a similar vibe or have a unique look to them. But back then, you know, it was a fairly unique thing. You know, I had never seen anything like it before.
I love me my superhero comics. I do. I really do. I love me my Spider-Man. But you know what? I also love I Hate Fairyland. I also love Squirrel Girl. I also love Saga. I also love Incognito. I also love The Fade Out. It doesn't have to be the same thing over and over and over and over. I'll read Civil War and I'll read Walking Dead, and I will enjoy them both. I'll enjoy them in different ways. One is like eating a nice bowl of cereal while you're watching cartoons. The other's reading a novel. We got to open up the market. You got to open up the market. And the people who whine and complain that these girls and these African Americans are coming in, it pisses me off to no end. And it reminds me of when Milestone started. Milestone was this imprint that DC did that was created to sell multicultural comics. They had African American characters. They had Asian American characters. They had Native American characters. They it was diverse. And I remember at the time, people were like, I'm not going to read those books. They're just for blah, 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 blah. No. The comics are forever who wants to read them. And if you're going to get all sad and angry that Marvel or DC are introducing characters that aren't middle-aged white guys, there's the door. Joe, what are you geeking on?
I found this watch and Fitbit on a bench in Como Park. And I put it on eBay.
Uh-huh.
Got enough to go buy me some old white man comics. Uh-huh. So I'm feeling pretty good right about now.
Yeah, I'm just gonna check out for a second and look up my watch on Amazon.
No, I can't afford Amazon. I discovered something new as I took another step into the 21st century.
Oh!
I went to the library, and for continuity notes, you can go back and talk about how proud I was to finally get a library card again after 20 years. My daughter still laughs, you know, because the guy was all concerned when I said, when did you have your library card last? Oh, about 20 years ago. But he looked it up, and of course, there's no record to it. Well, I figured, you know what? I don't have enough Burt Reynolds in my life. So I figured I would go check out his new book, But Enough About Me. Because I like Burt Reynolds. My first Burt Reynolds movies were the fun car chasing stuff. You know, the Cannonball Run, Smokey and the Bandit. When I saw him in Boogie Nights, I mean, I was like, wow, he's cool. I've got a whole...
I saw him at Boogie Nights, I was like, oh, crap, this is creepy.
I haven't even gotten to Deliverance yet, so I'm still waiting to get to Creepy. Never saw it. And Longest Yard...
Deliverance is a dark film.
I know, I've been... But, you know, he talks all about this in his book, so I figure I'll go check it out. And I get there, and they have two books in the system. Neither are at that particular library. I probably could have drove to the other library and got it, but I thought, you know what? I'm going to, wait a minute, what's this? Download the book? Now, I've downloaded books before. I bought a couple off of the Play Store on Google. I think the
the Jim Henson biography that came out and the one with George the Animal Steel. And I have them in my phone, and I can always go online and get them. But I didn't realize you could do that with library books. So I follow the directions. You download something. I think it's called 3M Cloud Library. Put in your library card number, and now you can access any book that the library system has for 21 days. I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. Still a different experience than sitting down with a physical book and reading it. But considering I just want to read the book, I don't want to buy it, I don't want to own it. And I read it. Again, Burt Reynolds, but enough about me. It sounds like you're just sitting down with Burt, having yourself a beer, and he's just going on, moseying about whatever hits his mind. He talks a lot about the actors he works. He talks a lot about Sally Fields, Lonnie Anderson. He talks about learning how to film, how he teaches it, what his takeaway of it. The one advice he says to this day that Spencer Tracy told him, a lot of name dropping with the stars that he's run across over the years, you know, friends like Clint Eastwood, things like that. Talks a bit about his illness. For a long time, he was out of sight, and people kept thinking, oh, he's got AIDS. And what I remember, he says it was, am I saying it right, Corey, TMJ, a dislocation of the jaw?
Yes.
And it, like, really aggravated him and gave him just headaches to the point where he couldn't talk, he couldn't see light. It was just terrible. And eventually,
it also can make it almost impossible for you to eat solids because it's not lockjaw, but it feels like it. So a lot of people who have TMJ will actually go to a liquid diet rather than you begin to chew, and then the jaw just starts hurting.
I remember when he finally surfaced, it was on Tonight Show. He talks in the book about how he got it taken care of, and talking with Johnny Carson, he goes, well, you've been sick for a while there. He goes, yeah, I saw there that the National Enquirer there was saying that I had AIDS. Oh, that's terrible. How does that make you feel? I said, well, it makes me feel better than the Weekly World News. They said I died of AIDS.
Oh, God.
Again, Bert, he's got a great sense of humor. I mean, he sounds like a guy, if you just saw him on the street, you could talk and at least, you know, chat with him because fans mean a lot to him. So we're checking out the book. And, you know, I read the book in a course of about 3 days. And when I'm done, you just hit the button. It goes back into the system. So I thought that was kind of interesting. In terms of real books, I talked about this one, The Pleasure Palace, a novel by Joan Lee, Stanley's wife. And we talk about that book, The Amazing, Fantastical, Incredible, blah, 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 where Stan talks about one day Joan just says, I'm going to write a book, but you don't know anything about writing. I'm going to write a novel, but you don't know anything about it. Well, she wrote the novel, picked a cheap copy off eBay, and it was interesting. I mean, it's very, very soap opera-ish. It starts out the first chapter with the murder, and then you go way back in the beginning, and we could pretty much cover everybody that was in that first chapter as they lead up and get to the actual murder and the results afterwards. And all I can say about The Pleasure Palace is, Joan, you can really write them sex scenes. Holy shit. Go pick yourself up some Joan Lee, The Pleasure Palace. It was fun reading. I already talked about Tom Beilin's Chicacabra. And I definitely recommend that. Speaking of other guys I like, I picked up Howard Chaykin's Century West. I read this in one sitting. I read it twice. It was that damn good. Plus, it was also one of those books where a lot of people get introduced in the beginning, and then as they become more significant, I went back and reread it so I can kind of follow along with it. And it's kind of takes place in Century, Texas. It used to be a sleepy little Berg, barely a whistle stop between nowhere and the great beyond until the 20th century arrived with a bang, bringing with it aeroplanes, automobiles, telephones, paved streets, and of course, the movies. So this one is from Image, and definitely pick it up. I did pick up Civil War III. And also another one I picked up, Gods of War, Civil War tie-in. This is the one with Hercules. And what's interesting about it is that they stopped the regular Hercules comic, and this is kind of a continuation of that story. So if you've been reading the Hercules book, and like me, we're going to just wait and jump on board after the Civil War crossover, go back and pick it up. That's probably the only crossover I'm actually going to pick up. two more graphic novels. The first one, How to Talk to Girls at Parties, by Neil Gaiman, Fabio Moon, and Gabriella Ba. And basically, it's a Ian is a 15-year-old boy, just doesn't understand girls, while his friend Vic has them all figured out. They are in for the shock of their lives when they crash a local party. And the art is fun, and all I can say is if you ever want to know what a universe looks like if it's mad at you, pick up this book. The only real complaint I have about it is that it is a $18 hardcover. It probably could have been done as a, like Howard Jenkins' thing was a little bit more like the, what we call the Baxter format, like Dark Knight was printed on, a little bit more square bound. It could have probably been done in that format and had the same effect. Maybe drop it by $10 so it has more of a chance of being bought and read by people. The last one, and this was probably the wrong couple weeks to want to read a book like this, Dark Knight, A True Batman Story.
I want to read that.
By Paul Dini and Eduardo Risso. And this is a Vertigo book written about a true life event that happened to Paul Dini. He was walking home one evening, and he was jumped and viciously beaten. Had several broken bones, a shattered face. And while they don't really experience the arduous recovery process that he went through, you do kind of deal with the imagined antics he has while Batman, Harley Quinn, the Penguin, the Joker kind of taunt his memory as he works himself back into full health. The fact that it's a true story, an autobiographical tale of Dini's courageous struggle, makes it a hard read. And, of course, being a Vertigo book, it probably, and, you know, it's a hardcover as well. You know, like I said, if you're feeling down, this is not the book to read. But I went through it, and it is a very, very powerful book. See, TV-wise, I was jazzed to see that the new Star Trek show that's going to be debuting next week will air 24 hours, or was it 72? It's going to be on Netflix after it originally is shown on the CBS pay-per-view network, whatever it is. So another reason to drop some coin for Netflix. And I'm pretty happy because, check this out. See how clean my teeth is? Hello?
No.
Oh.
No, sorry. I don't.
Okay. Well, I went into the dentist finally. He said, how about my eyes? Check out the eyes. Had the eyes checked out. Doing pretty good. What do you think, Corey?
I might get to do that in a couple of months.
Okay, and of course, my colonoscopy. Check this out, right? What do you think about this?
All right.
Okay, fine. Anyways, I'm clean as a whistle. My eyes are good, and my teeth feel tingly. Jen, what are you geeking on? What's got you happy as a clam?
I've been watching movies. Isn't that really weird?
It is.
It is weird.
Who are you, and what have you done with Gin Wicked?
I don't know. It's like I've been working so much, I finally understand the appeal of, like, television and movies, because I'm just completely fried. And I still don't really like to watch that stuff alone, but I've been out with a couple different people just hanging out. So I've watched Mask of the Paradise, which is, do you know what that is?
Is it Nausicaa, the Valley of the Wind?
No, I said Mask of the Paradise.
Oh, no. Oh, Phantom of the Paradise.
Yeah, Phantom. See, I can't even keep the titles right.
Phantom of the Paradise, yes. It's a Brian De Palma movie with, oh, man, is that a fun movie.
It was. And I, you know, like, I enjoyed, like, looking at catching the references because I'm really familiar with Phantom of the Opera, but I've obviously never heard of this before. And so it was explained to me kind of this is like a predecessor to Rocky Horror Picture Show, you know, kind of opened up the genre, I guess. And
very much a parody of the glam rock that was happening at
the
time.
And all of that. So I really enjoyed that. And then a couple days later, I saw Flash Gordon in the theater, which was fucking amazing.
Flash Gordon, savior of the universe.
Yeah.
But Also written by Lorenzo Semple Jr. Joe, what else did Lorenzo Semple Jr. write that we might know?
What do you mean, Flash Gordon approaching?
I've been dying to say that ever since episode number one, and now I did.
Lorenzo Semple Jr. wrote the first four episodes of the Batman TV show and the Batman movie from the TV show.
So you don't just possess only a freakish knowledge of comic books, but also movies and television?
We've never got into the weird sort of knowledge I have about movies.
Well, I really enjoyed Flash Gordon, and my friend is very excited that's been showing me these movies because he's like, you know, the answer to have you seen blank is almost always no. So
I would agree with that.
So he's like, well, this is great because, you know, and I like go over and we're going to have dinner and watch a movie or two. And I said, give me some choices. You know, don't show me a movie wall and ask me to pick from like 2000 movies. You know, narrow it down for me. So he picks like five things for me to choose from. And it's like great because he's like a human Netflix, I guess. He's like super stoked to like, okay, you like this. I think you'll like this. And, you know, kind of go from there. But I really enjoyed Flash Gordon. And I don't watch a lot of movies. And I haven't really liked a lot of movies because I don't really like drama so much. I tend to like funny stuff or stuff that's really unique or colorful or strange. So Flash Gordon is all of those things. So I really enjoyed that. And then last night I saw the new Ghostbusters movie, which was good. I enjoyed it. You know, I'm pretty critical, so I had kind of mixed feelings about it overall. I felt like it could have been better, but I didn't dislike it. You know, it was very fun. And if you watch the first one now, you know, the first Ghostbusters movie, it's a great movie, but it's pretty stupid. You know, they're all pretty stupid. You enjoy it for what it is.
Franchise rights alone will make us millions.
You enjoy it for what it is. And so I'm watching this movie kind of with that in mind. And also, again, it's hard for me to say for certain because I don't watch a lot of movies. But it feels to me like when I watch a movie like the first two Ghostbusters movies or even a movie like Dark Crystal or Labyrinth, a lot of the movies I liked when I was younger, a lot of the movies they made during the 80s, it feels like they don't make that kind of movie anymore. They just don't. You kind of get the feel sometimes from some of the, like, you know, animated films, but not really. So it was nice to see, like, this kind of campy movie made in the spirit of the original Ghostbusters films. It's got all the same kind of, like, silly humor, and you know, some of it's a little bit eye-rolling, and it's like, exactly, you know, that's kind of what I expected. I was grateful that they didn't try to make it very serious and dramatic, like everyone loves to do now. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, you always see, like, you had, like, the fun, campy, like, Tim Burton Batman movies, and then the kind of crappy couple in between, and then you get the really smart gritty reboot, and it's like, please don't make a dark, gritty Ghostbusters movie. So I was glad that it was very kind of lighthearted and silly. It doesn't ask a whole lot for you, and we went to the theater, and the theater had food, and the food was good, and I even had an alcoholic beverage with my movie, which was awesome. So
I find it amazing that people now look at the first Tim Burton Batman movie and call it campy, when at the time when it came out, everybody was like, they finally made a serious Batman movie. They finally did
right,
it.
Right, right. Well, my friend I was watching the movies with, you know, his favorite Batman movie is like the old one from the 60s or whatever.
By Lorenzo Semple Jr.
Sure, sure. So, yeah, no, we got into it like right away. Because I'm like, yeah, I'm looking at the stuff on his movie shelf, like, oh, here's some of the few things that I've seen. I've seen all the Batman movies because I like Batman. He's like, which ones are your favorite, right? And I'm like, oh, I really love the one with Penguin and Catwoman. And he's just giving me this dirty look because I guess he really doesn't like Tim Burton. So But then we...
That was before Tim Burton became a personal cliche.
Yeah, and it was before, like, because if they made it now, it'd have, what, Johnny Depp playing Batman, and he would be, like, quirky and kind of sexy and weird, and in what's-her-face playing every other female character. So, you know, whatever. But, so there's that. And, you know, we kind of got into it over the Tim Burton thing. I didn't really like any of the Tim Burton movies after, like, Nightmare Before Christmas. You know, and I just, I think I watched.
Police, coming to get you.
No, it's my ride.
Oh, sorry.
Was it Tim Burton that did the new Willy Wonka that was so terrible?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. As I knew he was involved somehow, I think.
A Corpse Bride.
Yeah, so that was kind of, yeah, before he became like a walking parody of himself. I think, did he do Sweeney Todd? Because I saw that.
Yes.
That was okay. But I think in that case he was restrained a little by the source material. So, but yeah, we high-fived over a mutual dislike of Quentin Tarantino. Because like I can tell you one thing for sure I don't like. I can't stand Quentin Tarantino movies.
Get out.
No problems there. No, and I told him, I went to see Pulp Fiction for the first time in my life. I was probably 24 or 25, and we saw it in one of those midnight release things where, you know, they play older movies like at the Landmark Theaters or the little artsier theaters in town. This is down in Houston, of course. And I got about a third of the way through Pulp Fiction and was like, I do not fucking understand why everybody likes this movie so much.
Don't worry, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, okay.
I'm not talking to either of you about movies.
I'm not talking about anything anymore. I'm done. Corey, whatever. What are you geeking on?
One of the announcements that has come out for San Diego Comic-Con, although it was made a week before, the publisher of Hard Case Crime, the crime novels that I absolutely adore. They publish a new one, and then they publish a vintage one. They have announced that they are going to be getting into comic books. So they are going to be publishing 5-7-issue miniseries that will then be collected as books and put out as trade paperbacks. And more crime comics for Corey. It's a good day. Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us ramble on about funny books for an hour and a half. And the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
I asked the librarian for a book about Pavlov's dog and Schrodinger's cat. She said it rang a bell, but she wasn't sure if it was there or not. Jin?
You just read that straight out on my Facebook feed.
Well, yeah, I only go with the good stuff.
Okay. Hit my music, boys.
Another fine podcast from Solitaire Rose Networks.
The end.